Anyway, our friend Rob Raines was kind enough to make some time for us today. First of all, if you haven't been going to STL Sports page to read all the stuff that Rob Raines has for you there, not only Rob Raines, but the people that help him, STLSportsPage.com, you got to get over there. He does these post-game synopsis every single game the Cardinals play. It's one of the first things I read in the morning, make sure I didn't miss anything. Rob Raines has been covering baseball in St. Louis just for ages. He still looks like he's about 40 years old. He's a Hall of Famer, Missouri Sports Hall of Fame, St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame. And you, again, follow him on X at Rob Raines. Rob, I hadn't seen you since the Hall of Fame meeting, but how you doing, man? Thanks for doing this.
I'm good, Bernie. Thank you. Just a sad day, though. I know we're all already missing our good friend.
What did you like about him personally? I'll ask you about the professional stuff and his baseball genius, but what did all those years of knowing him, even after he retired from managing, what did you admire the most? What did you love the most about him?
I would say his honesty, number one, his ability to look you in the eye and tell you something. I mean, I was relating a story, and just his friend, how great a friend he was. I mean, some of the best conversations we ever had, were never ones that ended up in the newspaper somewhere. I was telling a story today about a time, and I don't remember now what the situation was or what I asked, but, he was in his post-game thing, and I asked some kind of question, and he looked at me and goes, "Now, that's the goddamnest thing you've ever asked me." And then he paused about 10 seconds and said, "You want a beer?" That was why, I think part of it too, and you were there, with Rick and I a lot of the times too. I mean, it was a different era in covering the team. He knew, why he trusted us, Rick and I, and he knew that, we were only going to write something in the newspaper if it was something that, needed to be written. We weren't going to tell tales out of school, and he had the ability to talk to us and tell us what was going on without really ever having to worry about it showing up in the newspaper. The one exception to that was, I remember when we broke the Jack Hart trade. And remember, if you remember at the time, there was like a loan that he had with the Giants that had to get repaid before they could make the trade official or whatever. And he was still living in Kansas City at the time. But, after they made the trade official, I called him and I said, "Hey, just understand that the trade's official now. I want to see if you got any comment." And he goes, "I don't know why you need to talk to me. You've had everything in the newspaper all week."
He's
just the best. I mean, you just have a conversation with him. You love talking baseball. He knew you, your families, and I don't know if they could have a manager like that anymore in this day and age, with the TV cameras and the, websites and social media and everything. It's just a different world. But he was, in that era, he was the best. And I missed him, missed covering him. He made going to the ballpark as a reporter fun. I really loved my job. And part of the reason was because of him.
There's no doubt about it, Rob. And he loved the writers. I mean, he loved the beat writers. He liked the columnists too, but not as much as the beat writers. But he understood like there was value in for a manager to have a good relationship with the media and basically give them stuff to write about. And that sounds quaint now because media has changed so much. But he was right. You tell stories, you come up with angles, and the writers are going to be, they're going to be easy to deal with. They're going to appreciate you. And, we can get along great, but I've got to do my part. And he would tell other young managers that. Some of them listened, some didn't. The ones who listened were smart, And he would get mad at me a few times. I was really mad one time. I didn't like it. I was a little rattled, to tell you the truth. But anyway, let me ask you this. And again, you're a baseball historian, not only in St. Louis, but just baseball, period. Rob Raines is with us, great Rob Raines. I want to ask you this. Go back to the time where you knew Whitey was starting to make some moves, and he gets Ozzie Smith, and he's starting to rearrange things, and you knew that he was up to something, and maybe he explained it to you guys in advance of what his plans were to build a ball club and a style that would fit Busch Stadium too. And right. What did you think of it at the time before it was put into play? Did you think that's a great idea? Did you think, I'm not so sure about that? Did you think he was on to something? Because I would have loved to have been on the ground in St. Louis back then just to kind of get a sense of what the reaction was like when he revealed what his plan was.
Yeah, but I think it didn't all happen overnight. I mean, it kind of built gradually. You know, I mean, I don't think he, you know, 1980, when he got Ozzie, for example, you know, he didn't know for sure how good Willie McGee was going to be, too. And that was, of course, 3 years before they got Vince Coleman. So, I mean, it was kind of a little work in progress that kind of started, and each move kind of built on the next move, you know. I mean, I think he was smart in the sense that he knew it was going to be hard to hit a home runs at Busch Stadium. And he also knew that, you know, playing on that AstroTurf, you had to take, you know, advantage of the speed and defense. And I think, you know, I don't know that he knew immediately that it would be as successful as it turned out to be, or to the style and extent that it turned out to be, you know, 314 or something stolen bases in 1985. I don't know that he would have predicted that, you know, before all that happened. But it certainly, you know, he certainly knew that speed, you know, everybody always says, you know, speed is the one element that helps you both on offense and on defense. And I think he knew that he, you know, would take advantage of that if he could get some of those guys like that and build his team around that and not have to rely on home runs.
How much did you enjoy? Because, again, you love baseball. You have your entire life. Just taking the sports writing and media thing out of it, just as a fan, how much did Rob Raines and his family and your friends, how much did you just love watching that team play, the way they played?
It was just so exciting. Yeah, I mean, every night was going to be fun. You know, I mean, we can all sit there now and recall games that one thing happened or another happened. And, you know, I thought about a lot of it today because I talked to a lot of the guys on those 80s teams today for the story that, you know, we just posted on the website with their reaction, you know, to the news and everything. And it just brought back a lot of fun memories. You know, as I say, it was you didn't really consider it a job. You know, you were just enjoying watching the games and writing about them. And it was, going to the ballpark was fun. You know, I always, you know, people always remark to me, how about a job or something? And I go, I'm not going to a job. I don't work at a job. I'm going to a baseball game. You know, and I just kind of viewed it that that's what I did, you know, and it was an exciting style of baseball. I mean, you really did, you know, it was the old cliche about, you know, sit back and wait for a 3-run homer. You know, you didn't do that and say, well, you know, if you, I know it became popular later on to, you know, you didn't want to miss a Mark McGwire at bat or something like that. But, you know, watching Jack Clark, it was pretty exciting too. It just, you know, but he was usually at bat because he had two or three guys on base that had gotten on base with a ground ball. And, you know, I talked to Tommy Hurd the other day for a story. He was talking about, you know, the year of 1985 when he drove in 100 runs and only hit 8 home runs. A fourth of his RBIs came when he made it out because Willie was already on third.
it's something else. Do you you look back on Whitey too, and you reflect on it, and you've obviously had a long time just from a baseball standpoint to process it. Sorry, what do you think his legacy is? I mean, it's going to last a long time, but how would you define his legacy?
Well, I would say he was ahead of his time. You know, I talked to John Stuper today, and he said, well, I know it's an old cliche, but it's true. I mean, he was playing chess when everybody else was playing checkers. You know, he was an inning or two ahead of his time. You know, he would tell some of his pinch hitters, you know, okay, in the fifth inning, you're going to bat in the eighth inning. If this happens and this happens and this happens, then you're going to be hitting for this guy against this pitcher. And he was always right. You know, and he said, Stuper said, you know, you were sit there on the bench, and you never did you ever go, now, why in the hell is he doing that? You know, he said there was always a rationale and an explanation and a realization of the move. And, you know, he was just always right. I mean, he was just always smart about how, you know, nobody was smarter in in-game management. Nobody managed a bullpen better than he did. You know, he always was ahead of the game and knowing what was going to happen. I mean, he was, you know, you'll remember this, sitting in his office before games where he had all of his notebooks out and all of his colored pencils and making charts for, you know, the pitchers of who was all the different hitters. And if they hit a line drive, it was a solid line. If they hit a ground ball, it was a checker line. And he was a saber metrics analytics guy before there were computers. You know,
he knew
how to, like, you know, position his defense and play the angles because of all the study and work that he did. You know, it was funny. I was talking to Jim Riegelman today. He was one of his coaches in the 80s and got his job as a manager for the Phillies for a long time because of Whitey. But he said, he said, I guess you could say Red was the bench coach, but before we used that term, he goes, but he never saw anybody standing next to Whitey during a game. He was always by himself, leaning on the railing over by the steps of the dugout. He never, you know, he didn't need anybody saying, Whitey, what do you think we ought to do about this, or suggesting a move, because he didn't need to do that because Whitey already had everything all thought out in his head ahead of time, know what was going to happen.
Yeah, he was a couple steps ahead of the other dugout. It was amazing. I want to ask you this too. baseball in the 70s in St. Louis, it was a down time. Not that all those teams were bad, but there was only, you know, there you only had there wasn't you there weren't no wild cards, so it was a very limited window to get to the playoffs. And there were some good Cardinals team, but it was sort of a lost decade just for people. I'm aiming this at, like, you maybe some younger fans listening. It was a lost decade in that they never went to the postseason, and the crowd started to go down. And what about from the standpoint of Whitey Herzog's impact in kind of transforming the franchise, right, just as a business, and how, right, like restoring the popularity?
Well, I was lucky. I moved to St. Louis in November of 1979 from Kansas City, where I had known Whitey in Kansas City as manager of the Royals. I was still working for United Press International at the time. And Whitey got here, 7 months later in June of 1980. So, and he immediately realized that how bad the team was. He, turned it over to Red after a month or two so he could go look at all some of the minor leaguers and figure out what he was going to do. But one of the things that I know he was the most proud of, and that he talked about often, even after he was done managing, was how they set attendance records year after year after year. And he was proud of that, how much his style of baseball attracted fans. When we still talk about it today, it's got a name, Whitey Ball. If it's got a name like that, it must have been pretty popular and pretty good. And I think that there's a lot of, all you had to do was look at the reaction today from just run-of-the-mill fans, who probably even maybe didn't even have a personal, interaction with Whitey or anything, but they just knew him from going to the ball games, and how people in that generation, young people probably in their, teenage years, maybe in their 20 years in the 80s when the team was winning, that's what drew them to the ballpark. That's what made them baseball fans, and that's why they're still Cardinal fans to this day.
Was that's right.
The way they appreciated and understood and valued the kind of baseball that team played.
Rob Ranger, because you knew him so well, when he decided he had enough, it was in, I believe, June of 1990, and it was a tough year. They had a lot of walk-year guys. There was some friction in the clubhouse. He didn't think the guys were playing for him. He couldn't ask them to do things like, give yourself up to move the guy over. And it was a really fractured kind of year. But were you surprised that he never returned to managing? He did work as a de facto general manager for the Angels for Gene Autry, but mm-hmm. and he had many, you probably know a hell of a lot more than me. He had a lot of opportunities to manage if he wanted them, but he never went back. Why do you think that is? Do you think he was ever close?
I think he was tempted a few times. And one of the jokes he said often was he told somebody trying to hire him as a manager, if you can tell me you'll play your games at 10 o'clock every morning, I'll do it. But that's the only time I can guarantee him he'll be awake. So I think he had some opportunities. But I think he also had, he enjoyed his family. He enjoyed his private life. And I think he was, comfortable that he had done enough in his career, to he really wanted to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he was really worried for a long time that losing the two World Series in the 80s was going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. But luckily it didn't, finally. And he got to enjoy that moment, which he, richly deserved. But, I don't know how tempted he was. I mean, he didn't like the way the game was changing. I certainly don't think he liked the explosion of the media world and the social media world. He might have had a hard time kind of covering some of his post-game press conferences live on television. might not have worked out too well. I would have liked to have seen him manage longer and maybe get another shot with another team, but he was so revered in St. Louis and such a legend in St. Louis that I don't know if going somewhere else would have, changed that or not. Even when he worked, like you mentioned, for the Angels and the other consulting jobs here or there, he still lived in St. Louis. He wasn't the face of the franchise or anything. So I don't know, many people probably even knew that he was doing that. It was kind of like a behind the scenes role. So it kept his kind of legendary status in St. Louis, intact.
Rob Raines, I want to make sure everybody, including me, after the show, I can't wait to read the piece you put together about the passing of Whitey Herzog and some of the former Cardinals you spoke to for that. I'll be digging in later. STLSportsPage.com, STLSportsPage.com. So everyone should get over there and read that. And, again, please follow Rob Raines on X at Rob Raines. And, Rob, I really appreciate it. It was really good to visit with you on the radio. And thanks for sharing your perspective on Whitey.
Thank you, Bernie. I appreciate it.
All right, my friend. That's Rob Raines, who's one of the all-time great ball writers here in St. Louis, and he's got unique perspective on Whitey because he did cover him in Kansas City as well.